yesterday evening, we spent some time describing the history of Kardamoni Devahuti's marriage, Kapila Dev becoming their son, Kapila Dev's beginning instructions. We summarized the chapters 25, 26, 27, 28, and 29, just revisiting a little bit. This is the third chapter out of those chapters mentioned so far that devotional service is the topic. So Devahuti's question at the beginning of the chapter is, devotional service is pure, is it possible that one who is influenced by the modes of nature can engage in devotional service? Yes, devotional service in ignorance, passion, and goodness were described. A theme throughout the chapter was this understanding of separatist versus not a separatist. You know, in their common use of the word separatist, it has a pretty negative connotation. Like it's not politically correct to be a separatist. So, but this is more of a philosophical notion than a, you know, a social notion. It's, well, separatist, there's three areas that, this term, so that Bhinadrik, Brinadarshana, Prithak, Bhava, four or five different terminologies indicating this separate. So separate, having a separate, we heard, having a separate interest. You know, Krishna wants and I want, separate. That was one connotation. Then another is not seeing super soul within living entities, and therefore, you know, separate. So it leads to friends and enemies, and you know, my group, your group. So that those kinds of connotations, minus seeing of the super soul within, figuratively or literally, understanding the presence of every living being is the reposing place of super soul. If we could actually see like that, it would be different than if we don't. And then a third area, kind of connected to the first of separate interest, but very specific about the regard that one has towards the fruits of activities. Now we're used, because you know, in the Hare Krishna movement we use that phrase all the time, the fruits of one's activities. Pala, karma pala in Sanskrit. And a separatist is one who has a sense of possessiveness over the fruits of activities, and because of that possessiveness, or part of the spirit of that possessiveness, is to be the enjoyer of those fruits of activities. I'm going to read a little section from chapter 29. It started yesterday evening, but we'll go over it, starting with 28 if you have your little device. Chapter 29, text 28 through 33, is describing grades of living entities. And at the end, the topmost position is those who have proper regard for the fruits of their activities. So it'll start with living entities, or excuse me, matter, where there's no living entities present. And then there's living entities. distinct from matter, and then gradations of living entities. So when we're living, when there's soul present, there's activity. And then it's a vague issue, just as it is in Bhagavad Gita, about fruits of activities. Yes? I mean, immediately after describing Sankhya philosophy, chapter 2 Bhagavad Gita, how does one, what follows, of course immediately what follows is Buddhi Yoga, but chapter 3, chapter 5, how does one regard the fruits of activities? Because you can have a very nice theoretical understanding. I'm not this body. And then you start doing something, which is always, we're doing something. And somehow it gets lost. I'm not this body, just like flies away. And we're, you know, thinking of ourselves in terms of the body and the enjoyer of our activities and the fruits of our activities. And then we go, whoops, you know, I got slammed. And after crying a little bit, then we remember, whoops, I made a mistake. I forgot, I'm not this body. And I'm not the enjoyer of the fruits of my activities. They go together. I and mine go together. And you can have this nice theoretical understanding, which is exactly what Devahuti says in chapter 27. I get it. I'm not this body. But aren't they inextricably connected? Body, spirit and matter? And somehow we just, you know, like, keep going back to identifying with matter. Even we have knowledge and there's detachment. It's insufficient. Without bhakti. He says, you're right. He said, bhakti is sufficient. So when we do bhakti, we also have to have a proper understanding of I and mine. The soul, ourself, and then this fruit of activities thing. It's a big deal. Not a small deal. It's a philosophical discussion. But it's how we lead our life, how we see, and therefore this drik or drishaha, how we see. How you see is your consciousness. And if you see as Krishna sees, then you're all right. And if you see differently than Krishna sees, you're in the soup. And how do you get yourself out of the soup? Well, you know, just like crossing your fingers or hoping or, you know, study a bunch and get some knowledge and then you're out. No, insufficient. Knowledge is with bhakti, there's also a subset of bhakti is, just as we know from Bhagavad Gita, Gyan and Vairagya, they're included. It's a subset. Right? Vasudevi Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayotata Janiyati Ashu Vairagyam Gyanam Cha Yad Ahaitukam. Causelessly they come. So, grades of living entities, and at the topmost, we'll hear, is what's inside, absorption in thought of the Supreme Lord, meditation upon the Supreme Lord, because you become attached, not just mechanical, but attached with deep feeling of devotion, and then the proper regard for what you do. It's what you do is an act of devotion to the Supreme, and therefore the fruits go to the Supreme. There's no question about it. Not so much for me and so much for you and so much for me and so much for you. It's one thing. We won't get to that position if we don't have these, you know, proper understanding of self and proper understanding of the activities of the coverings, the body and mind. So here's the list. Starts with text 28. Short list. I mean, 5 verses. Living entities are superior to inanimate objects, O Blessed Mother, and among them living entities who display life symptoms are better, which means there's some things that are living, but you don't detect so readily that they're alive. Souls may be present in a somewhat dormant condition. you know, like a seed or something. There's life inside the seed. Animals with developed consciousness are better than them, and better still are those who have developed sense perception. The next verse is ranges of sense perception. Text 29. Among the living entities who have developed sense perception, those who have developed sense of taste are better than those who have developed only the sense of touch. Better than them are those, so like, you know, a paramecium, or, you know, one of those little guys, single-celled living entity. By touch, they can, you know, by heat sensation, they can move around. And but so more advanced is the sense of smell. Better than those who have developed sense of smell, those with the sense of hearing. Text 30. Better than those living entities who can perceive sound are those who can distinguish between one form and another, the sight. Better than them are those who have developed upper and lower sets of teeth. And better still are those who have many legs. Better than them are the quadrupeds, and better than the human beings. Two legs. Text 31. That's like physiognomy. Now, what about consciousness? Among human beings, the society which is divided according to quality and work is best. They follow varnashram. Best. In fact, elsewhere, human society doesn't begin until, human existence doesn't begin until this stage. And in that society, the intelligent men who are designated as brahmanas are best. Amongst the brahmanas, one who has studied the Vedas is best. Among the brahmanas who have studied the Vedas, one who knows the actual purport of the Vedas is best. Text 32. Better than the brahmana who knows the purpose of the Vedas is he who can dissipate all doubts. And better than him is one who strictly follows the brahminical principles. Better than him is one who is liberated from all material contamination. And better than him is a pure devotee who executes devotional service without expectation of reward. Prabhupada writes in the purport, the position of an acharya is that he executes devotional service with no desire for elevation to a higher position of life. He serves because that's what souls are supposed to do, and he does. He likes being spirit soul, serving, not to achieve something. Then text 33, therefore, I do not find a greater person than he who has no interest outside of mine. So that's the interest part. The separatist is one who does have separate interest. And who therefore engages and dedicates all his activities. That's his fruitive thing. You know, the activities and the fruits of your activities. Dedicates all his activities and all his life, everything, unto me without cessation. Arpita Ashesha Kriya. He offers all actions. And Arta, the fruits of those actions. So it's Karma Yoga is a subset of Bhakti Yoga. That is, Karma Yoga. There may be a motivation from the Karma Yogi. I don't want bondage. I want liberation. So, working where there's fruits, and attached to the fruits, there's bondage. So I offer the fruits to the Supreme because I want liberation. I don't want entanglement. And bhakti is, you know, forget that part. I want to be engaged. We heard this from Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur in Madhurya Kundamani. Bhakti, the essence of bhakti is a desire to serve Krishna. Very simple. Desire to be in a relationship with Krishna over serving Krishna. Very simple. That's bhakti. So then the things that we do are spirited by bhakti. I can use this body. I can use the mind. I can use the intellect. I can use whatever it is that's within the purview of that which Krishna has given. I can use that in service to Krishna and find happiness in offering those things in service to Krishna. Whatever it is. Whatever it is. And if I don't have, I'm not hankering, oh, I wish I had. If Krishna... Anyway. So we make some endeavors to make some offering to Krishna, but it's not to get something. It's the centeredness of self, you know, enjoying separately from Krishna, is absent. It's only one thing. So the separatist is, there's Krishna's interest and then there's my interest. And what we're hearing is, as far as Kapila Deva is concerned, and he's speaking of himself as the super soul, I am in the hearts of all the beings. So Supreme Lord says that I don't consider there's a higher being than, has no interest outside of mine, and who therefore engages and dedicates all his activities and all his life, everything unto me without cessation. In the purport is the contrast of this other language. Bina Drik, Brina Darshana, Pratak Bhava, the separatist. Here it's two things. Samadarshanat. Samadarshanat means that he no longer has any separate interest. Semicolon. The devotee's interest and the Supreme Personality of Godhead's interest are one. It's not monism, it's love. The interest of the beloved is the interest of the lover. And that's bhakti. So I want to please him. I want to be in his service. I want to be in that relationship with him. Dasya. And then it may unfold in further rasas, but leaving rasa aside, no separate interest. Sama. So there's the knowledge, Bhagavad Gita, Pandita Samadarshana, Vidya Vinaya Sampane, Brahmani Gavihasani, Shuni Chaiva Svapakecha, Pandita Samadarshana. So that's the learned sage. So through knowledge, we can have knowledge of that, but because of implication in matter, long-standing implication in matter, it's very difficult just by knowledge to extract yourself. Again, one finds oneself engaged in material activity, exactly as Prabhupada writes over and over again. And so this samadarshanat is through bhakti. That's what Kapila Deva is teaching. And then a corollary notion, if one sees with no separate interest, then a second is akartu, which is also in text 33, without any sense of proprietorship. We touched on this yesterday, but the I and mine. So, no separate proprietorship in material consciousness. There certainly is a sense of proprietorship. Without launching into a whole long thing, the whole of Vishupanishad is about proprietorship. From the very Om Purnam Adak Purnam Idam, then Ishava Shamidam Sarvam, and Kurvaneva HaKarmani. You know, it's about proprietorship. And the transcendental position at being advocated there and advocated here is no sense of proprietorship. That is, anything that's in the category of mine actually Krishna's. It's being entrusted to me for some period of time, and I am to utilize it very carefully because it's Krishna's. More than if it's mine. It's Krishna's. So I have to utilize it very carefully. So there's that not only detachment from the material sense of proprietorship, but Krishna is the proprietor. He just comes out of the box. I mean, we put him in a box. We just ignored him. But actually, he's the proprietor. So it's becoming aware of his interest. That's my interest. That which is so-called my property, it's his property. So these two, I and mine. Kapila Dev said there's no higher. Now going back to those, the list of different living entities in the different grades, there is this separate interest. That's material consciousness, not just human, but any species of life, separate interest. That's why we get bodies. How does material life begin? Jiva Goswami asks this question. It's simple. If we understand how we got into material existence, it'll tell us how to get out of material existence. What's the doorway through which we came tells us where the exit is. There's a big sign, exit. It's the doorway through which we came, too. So it's the doorway through which we came into material existence that indicates where the exit is. And having a separate interest from the Lord. Same. His language is Bahir Mukha Jeev. Very simple. Living entity turns his face or turns attention away from the Supreme. Separate interest. So, chapter 30, which is our subject for discussion, is the separate interest program. And it's not, to repeat something that I said several times yesterday evening, it's not a judgmental, we're up here, there, down there, poo-poo on them. It's not that. It's helping us to understand that tendency is deeply within us. And through knowledge, some detachment to help us in our life of devotion. And, out of compassion, those that may not have that knowledge of devotion, to help in mood of humble service, those that may be entangled in the complexity of forgetting Krishna. So it's like an anatomy class. You pull away the skin and what's underneath. There's the veneer of material life and it looks like fun. All the kids are doing it. But really, what is it? It's an anatomy class of fruitive activity, you know, the subtle and the gross. The expectation for happiness and the consequence of something just the opposite. This is expanding on a message of Bhagavad Gita. It's that the teaching methodology is compare and contrast. Here is what pure bhakti is. Here is what pure bhakti isn't. Now let's go more deeply into the isn't part. So this can be the devotees that still have devotees that still have interest in fruitive activities, like us. And then there's those that don't even have bhakti, and all their interest is fruitive activities. The eye and mind conception entirely in the material arena. And there's, you know, gradations in between that and pure bhakti. So pure bhakti has been described. Now we're going into the affinity for matter. Self-identification and then in turn seeking happiness through those identifications with matter and the consequence. So it teaches us the consequence. That's like, you know, the warning on the package of cigarettes. The Attorney General says, this may kill you. I'll take three of them, please. No, there's warning. buyer beware. Fruitive activities, attraction, beware. So we'll begin the chapter. Description by Lord Kapila of adverse fruitive activities, the personality of Godhead said, text 1. As a mass of clouds does not know the powerful influence of the wind, a person engaged in material consciousness does not know that the powerful strength of the time factor by which he is being carried. The time factor was discussed at the end of chapter 29. I mean, there's definitely a link between 29 message and 30 message. Time, we heard, is the Supreme Lord, or the Supreme Lord is time, or it's his time energy. And by his time energy, as the super soul within, he brings things into being, he changes souls from one body to the next, he withdraws the whole cosmic manifestation. Things happen by the influence of time. And so the first verse is saying, those that are engaged in fruitive activities, they're oblivious to the influence of time, how time is ruling them. Time is ruling us. And like, the comparison is like clouds in the sky. They're not aware of how the wind is moving them, but the wind is moving them. And time is moving us. So, nice instruction. We should be conscious of the fact, as we're living our lives, time is ruling us. In every detail. There isn't like, well, some of it's not ruling me. Completely under control of time. And similarly, super soul. Those, Prabhupada ends the purport, those who are not in Krishna consciousness are carried away by the strong power of time without their knowledge as clouds are carried by the wind. So we're ruled by time. Text 2. Whatever is produced by the materialist with great pain and labor for so-called happiness, the Supreme Personality as the time factor destroys. And for this reason, the conditioned soul laments. So knowledge will help us being so conditioned that we think we can create and then we can enjoy that which we create. It's very bitter in many cases trying to get, you know, the endeavor and what we have to undergo to get something. So misery. And then we get something. Then there's elation. And then it doesn't last. Or it didn't satisfy according to our expectations that happiness it would bring. The economists, this is just like a commentary, a little bit. Economists, you know, they have to have a job too, so they get paid to study about consumerism and what drives the consumers, because marketers of products want to know what's going on with the consumers over there. So they study, you know, what's going on with the consumers, and you know, these things, they're concluding the same thing. There's this whole body of sociological and economic study of the psychology of consumerism. And what is being said here without the detail, that there's this one has this terminology and that terminology. There's different kinds of language that they use. Of course, they have to coin something, and then they get a name for having coined some terminology. But the dissatisfaction that comes from expecting happiness in buying something, so that like stress and anxiety over Barry Schwartz calls it the maximizers and the satisficers. He's a sociologist at some university, liberal arts university. And, you know, studies show that those persons that they're so obsessed with winning, they have to get the best. The best job and the best car and the best phone and the best this and the best that. So they study and study and study what's best out there. They just like stress themselves out to the max. And then they have to make a choice, and they can't make a choice. They're frozen, like his phrase, like a deer in headlights. They just, he said, they go get a job in Starbucks because they can't make a decision about it. What their best job should be. Professor at Swarthmore College. So, on and on and on, without all repeating all their studies. And then they get something, and then it didn't satisfy. And then there's buyer regret. Oh, I see somebody else has a different model, and they're enjoying more than I'm enjoying. And all that stuff. On and 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 on. So, back to the Bhagavatam, it says, you know, this, the fundamentals are the conditioned soul's regret. And what they're not recognizing is that the time factor is not just our endeavor, but time factor moves matter along, just like the wind blows the clouds. The clouds don't have to say, can I go over there? Wind, can you help me get over there? Time is moving all of us. And in pursuit of this expectation of happiness through objects that come through our fruitive activities, it's a position of suffering. That's the message of text 2. The misguided materialist, text 3, does not know that his very body is impermanent, and that the attractions of home, land, and wealth, which are in relation to that body, are also temporary. Out of ignorance only, he thinks, everything is permanent. Not necessarily like they put the stake in the ground and say, this is permanent. But you know, the mentality is like that. Near the Brooklyn Temple, it's becoming like Manhattan in terms of construction. There's like, on the one block that we live, there's 8 huge constructions. Did I share this with you? You know, the municipal parking lot, when you walk out the front door and go to the right, it's gone. The whole thing is gone. It's now going to be like, you know, a mega thing. And then go out the door and turn left. And there used to be a little, like a candy store. The candy store thing right on the corner. 15-story, 5-star hotel. Right across the street, there used to be a parking lot. 15-story condominium thing. The DMV is now 52, 55, whatever the story, something or other. And then it'll just keep going. Just, you know, way down at the far end where there's that, you know, car rental place, gone. It's now like, you know, another mega thing coming up. And then another one, and then another one. It's all over the place. You know, the people are, and Ramabhadra's filling me in with, you know, the guy that bought this one flipped it and told it somebody else so he can make his money. He's taking his money to go off and build another one somewhere. It's like Monopoly. Like kids. And you know, what are they going to do with that money? There's, you know, some win, some lose, and they win, they're happy, and they lose, they're unhappy, and then, what's the enjoyment? It's all temporary. Was for my family, my children, grandchildren, and all that's temporary too. And that's all they have. And cheating and lying and, you know, to get more money. That's just, you know, and that's just one arena. But, you know, the sense of permanence, it's not. But it's just, the deluding potency enables one to think like that. Although you just ask them and it's like clearer that it's not. Really unfortunate. The modes of nature just, and time, just rule their lives. Text 5. The conditioned living entity is satisfied in his own particular species of life. Well, I'll do that tonight. It's, you know, the situation that we're in, we think it's permanent, and then whatever, somehow, we lament what we have, but at the same time, you know, we're kind of stuck with it, the species, and so we become accustomed to it. That's this next section. There's the allure of happiness, but you go into the anatomy of that happiness and it's misery. To be continued. Any comments or questions on this? Yeah? Subhan.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. I've been thinking about this principle of cooperation and unity and diversity principle, and just being hearing about, you know, what you're explaining about this separatist condition that we, you know, have. How can we, because you have devotees, you know, we have this principle of unity and diversity. As devotees, we're working and then we're trying, you know, to the best of our abilities, serve, you know, Krishna and trying to see things from the perspective of Krishna. How can we see or understand that, you know, we're being influenced by this separatist thing?
Well, if we can't see it, just take it for granted. We are. Or, you know, flip it over and say, if we weren't, if we were free from that, what would it be like? And then the description is what it's like. And that's not, we're not experiencing. So there's, that's just by default, that's where we are. And then, how can we see that we're separate? Well, you know, look around. And how much compassion is there? How much do we identify with the likenesses of others that are like us? It's, you know, a groupism, spirit, individual or collective, separate. Just look and see. It's there. And, you know, in one sense, it's natural. In one sense, it's completely natural. Birds of a feather flock together. It's natural. You don't have to send birds to a bird school and say, okay, birds, you go over there and you go over there. Just, it's very, completely natural. While there may be that affinity for like-mindedness, the extra step is appreciating others who have a dip, you know, this unity principle. While there's diversity, and so it's natural that there is diversity. People that are musical, they like being with other musical people and making nice music. Natural. Somebody else that really doesn't like that, it's that you don't have the same camaraderie in making music together. It's just natural. At the same time, then there's other people that have another propensity and they like serving Krishna that way. And so appreciating them and hearing from them and sharing with them, that's, so when that's missing, that's an indication we're a separatist. Because really the interest is the music for Krishna, or the cooking for Krishna, or the something-something for Krishna. And they actually have, they're interrelated, in fact. When we have very nice music for Krishna and very nice prasadam for Krishna and very nice, you know, facilities that are kept clean and have sufficient space for each thing, and, you know, that kind of thing that some people roll up their sleeves and do, and somebody does outreach really well. You know, so they actually, they're part of a big picture. They are connected. And you know, the ultimate is they're connected to the happiness of Krishna. So we can't see that, and we can't see the Krishna connection in others with their like-minded services, their separatism. And then the converse. We can see Krishna's hand in that. So we're moving towards the unity principle for the non-separatist. Krishna's interest. Yes?
Yesterday's class, last evening class, you talked about devotional service in the mode of passion and ignorance.
And goodness.
And goodness.
And transcendence.
Yeah. So, but devotional service, I think what I heard in past, that devotional service, to perform devotional service, one has to be in the platform of goodness. At least that's where it starts.
No. The devotional service itself is transcendental. One may be in the mode of ignorance. Here's a nice example. Prabhupada gave this example. Ever been to 26 Second Avenue? In New York City, 26 Second Avenue? It's a narrow storefront, like 100 feet deep, and maybe, I don't know, 25 feet wide, 20, 25 feet wide. So it's like a railroad car, or a subway car, like that. Long and narrow. So the doorway is way over there, and Prabhupada's seat was way at the far end, and there's a window at, you know, next to the door. Then right over here, where Prabhupada was sitting, was a little toilet. So one time, a drunk man who had received prasadam from the devotees, and he wanted to do something for the devotees, right in the middle of the class. He comes stumbling through, right in the middle of the class, with a couple rolls of toilet paper. He goes into the bathroom, puts the rolls of toilet paper in the bathroom, stumbles back out the front door. And the devotees were ready to, like, you know, let the guy have it. You know, he's disturbing Prabhupada's class. And he sensed it. And he said, no, this, his devotional service has begun. He's not in the mode of goodness. But he wanted to serve. Prabhupada accepted it. Krishna accepted it. Serving the devotees. Okay? Something else? You have something? You have more? Okay. It's love. The simple answer is love. Take it from the Supreme and the living entity, put it over here. You know, a friend and a friend, or a husband and a wife, or lover and beloved. So, the regard, I remember in high school, we read a little short story, and there was, you know, man and woman that loved each other, and she had very wonderful hair, so he sold something that he had to make some ornament for her hair or something like that. And he liked something, so she had her hair cut, sold her hair, and got something for him that was, you know, what he sold to get something for her hair. I can't remember the detail. But the point was, you know, sacrificing for the one who one loves. And that's, so the living entity is tiny. Our capacity to, you know, think of something unlimited isn't there. But something, is some piece of the unlimited we understand Krishna may like. So we try to do that in such a way that Krishna will like. Make our interest his interest. The lover holds the interest of the beloved as, you know, let my will be thine is the Christian term. Let my will be God's will. Love. No, it's not the totality. It's my little tiny capacity. Okay. Something else? You have something?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, when you're describing about the New York City temple to Subal Prabhu, I got reminded of that that I have certain comfort zone where I feel, okay, if the environment is like this, then I can do my devotional service better. So, especially I would not like to be in a city environment. So I was thinking to myself whether, is that having those comfort zones, is it good for devotional progress?
In the beginning, and for someone who's advanced, you know, whatever situation Krishna puts me in, to be in uncomfortable situations is a privilege. Krishna is being very kind. He's taking away my comfort zone, so all I have left is his shelter. Krishna may not do that. But when Krishna does that, it's mercy. It may be hard to see the mercy in my comfort zone just disappeared. I'm feeling uncomfortable. But it's to help us take shelter of not the zone, but him. The very nature of this world, it's uncomfortable. Even in your comfort zone. It's the fish out of water example. What's comfortable for a fish out of water? We belong in that atmosphere, spiritual atmosphere, where everything is for Krishna. Even in the spiritual world, or at least in the pastimes of Krishna, there's challenges and difficulties, and the devotees go, ah, Krishna. And Krishna helps them. Nice. Follow? So the aspiration should be, let me come to the position of simply sheltering Krishna, and we may, you know, akama, sarva kamova, if we have some desire, Krishna, my comfort zone doesn't, my dependencies, material dependencies on having a certain configuration of matter is such that I'm not able to be peaceful while doing service to you unless such and such. You know, so can you help with such and such? It's not pure devotion, but we read yesterday. Well, it's not pure devotional service. One should have such a, take shelter of Krishna, even in those situations. But eventually, may I come to the position where it's just shelter of Krishna, no condition. Okay, there's a question over here.
My question is, you said too, when you do the devotional service, you don't have any expectation.
Well, that's pure devotion.
But I thought our ultimate goal is to come out of this circle of birth and death. So in a way, I am expecting that to be like an ultimate goal.
It's a subset. Excuse me for interrupting. If you have $1 million, this is like really easy to understand. If you have $1 million, can you take care of your $10 and $100 problems? If you have $1 million? So the $1 million gift from Krishna is love for Krishna. Liberation is already there. I don't need to aspire for liberation going beyond the cycle of birth and death. It's already there. But I may not understand that. So maybe I want liberation. Okay. Desire liberation. Go to Krishna for liberation. But it's already there if you've come to this other one. Okay, so now I don't understand that yet. My consciousness hasn't opened enough to understand that. So I aspire for liberation. Going beyond birth and death. And as bhakti grows and grows and grows, it's not required to desire liberation. It's actually an impediment for love that's unrestricted, unconditional. Does that make sense to you?
Yes.
Okay.
And is it then, so maybe I don't expect, like, on material level, that, you know, if I'm doing devotional service, I get something materially. But is it wrong to ask for, like, spiritual progress or, like, expect that?
There's nothing right and wrong about all of this. Take everything to Krishna. He's your mother. He's your father. He's your dearmost friend. He's the order supplier. He's got a big warehouse. Whatever you want. So the consideration is love. As you or me or any one of us grow and mature, we don't need to ask for those things. That we can ask for those things. Mommy, it's cold out. Can you get me a jacket? And mommy's already got 10 jackets lined up because she's thinking of her child. The child can ask, but mommy's already thinking. You get the idea. Krishna knows what our needs are. So we can take them. It's a relationship. We can take them. Krishna, you know me. I'm trying to know you, but I'm feeling the need for this and that. There's a very nice verse. I have many nice verses in the Bhagavatam that describes, which sounds like what you're, the position you're speaking about. One who is advanced devotee may understand very well the misery that comes from hankering for something limited and temporary. And the real happiness is through unmotivated love for Krishna. So they have that knowledge. At the same time, they still have that hankering for something limited and temporary. So, rather than ignore or pretend that it's not there, they continue on in their devotional service knowing that having that hankering and even getting the thing that they're hankering for is going to bring not happiness, but a disturbance in their relationship with Krishna, but they carry on with the wish that that may one at some point in time fade and disappear. So go on enthusiastically in your devotional service, knowing that that state of no obstruction in that relationship will be there. Love. Krishna will take care of yoga kshema vahamyam in Bhagavad Gita. For those who engage in unalloyed devotion to me, whatever they require, I see that they have it. Whatever they have, I see that it's preserved. We don't have to be on guard in case Krishna falls asleep and forgets what we need. Krishna knows what we need. He's a loving, like parents are loving to their children. Krishna's loving to us. So really the essence that should be energized and nourished is the mood of love. But take care of our necessities, the liberation part and the this and that part. And if there's some, if this seems that there's some disturbance in what we feel that we need, like a child who may feel I need fill in the blank, and their parents may not supply that something. So the child may be a little disturbed. Why are you not supplying that? All the other kids have one. I want one. You get the idea. So what we need, he'll see. And he'll take care. That's when there's a loving relationship, that's where the heart is. Now, the irritation is, I still feel I have this need. So then that's something that it's out of our hand anyways. So we should tolerate. Make, in service to Krishna, make some arrangement. And if it doesn't happen, we don't lament. It's just we serve Krishna to the best of the ability, intelligence that Krishna gives us. That's bhakti. And the result is up to him. That's reality anyways. So we can go to him with this concern, that concern. It's part of the relationship. Okay. In the back.
Hey Krishna Maharaj, I have this. This question came from the fourth verse in the chapter that a living entity has, like, tries to find some particular type of satisfaction in whatever species one is in. And to me, like, I feel that I'm going through something where it seems that specific type of enjoyment that I want to get from other than Krishna consciousness, it seems to be too subtle and deep. And
it seems to be?
Too subtle, too much subtle,
okay,
and deep, and it keeps coming back layer after layer. And
welcome to the club. We're card-carrying members.
And
so therefore, what to do?
The question is that because of so much reinforcement and guidance, now I want to identify myself as a servant. I want to identify myself as a servant of Krishna. But
very good. You're halfway there.
But during the transition of this whole Anarthanivritti process, I'm just wondering how to keep myself on track, because this going through this Anarthanivritti sometimes seem to interfere so much with external, like, other areas of my life. And it's, I want to keep myself straight, so I'm just like...
Just hold on. Hold on to the instruction. And when you find that your attention has gone from the instruction and instead to other, bring the mind back. And then however n number of times what that needs to happen, keep doing that. Because that's the instruction is that which will pull you out of the material condition. I'm using the metaphor of hold on to the instruction. It's something that an example that Prabhupada gave. If somebody's at the bottom of a well, there's only one way to get out. Somebody lowers a rope. You hold on to the rope. You don't even have to climb. Just hold on to the rope. And they'll pull you out. And the rope is instructions. Krishna's instructions, teacher's instructions that are from Krishna's instructions. And just hold on. You know, and while your legs are going like this and, you know, yeah, but I'm still in the well. Okay, hold on to the rope. Just hold on to the rope. The process works. So it's the tendency for our attention to go away into some area that's what our conditioning is, or the unwholesomeness of our material circumstance, or, excuse me, the material conditioning that we have, not the circumstance per se. It's our consciousness. separate from Krishna, enjoyment consciousness. It's pernicious. It doesn't go away very easily. Fruitive mentality is, we're habituated deeply. So hold on to the instruction and make sure the connection of that you have towards the instructors is strong, because otherwise, you know, the determination to value the instruction and hold the instruction will diminish. You know, we're salvationists. We like to be free, and including, you know, we like to be free from feeling ourselves dependent on anyone, anything. We just free, independent. But that's part of the illusion. We're not. And so, Krishna, the one who has the hold of the rope, from where all instructions come to get us out of or freed from our mature conditioning, he gives the empowerment to others on his behalf to assist us to take his instruction and hold it and move. So those relationships are very important, in addition to the instruction, the regard that we have for the sources of those instructions, Krishna's assistants, his representatives. Okay? Some?
So, this is a question about the respect topic.
Respect?
And relationships. So yesterday I was talking to someone following the class, and they were saying, so respect is the fabric of relationships.
Respect is a?
Respect is the fabric of any relationship.
Okay.
And so in a situation where one person has respect for the other, but the other person seems to always negate this person in whatever way and, you know, doesn't seem to have respect. So the person who's being disrespected, okay, we should be in the position of Amani Namana Dena.
Yeah, that was, we covered that yesterday, right?
And yet, in terms of having a relationship or doing some service together, there seems to be a challenge because there is not that intrinsic respect in the other person.
So you have to just be patient and continue to act according to the requirement to have a relationship. And if the other person doesn't, at least appears to not want a relationship, then, you know, you can make choices, you can check out, or you continue to provide the circumstance that makes the relationship possible. Mm. Pleasing Krishna, in other words. You do from your side. You can't mandate something from the other side. That's an option. You can just check out. That's another option. Or, you know, withdraw a bit from the relationship and not have invest so much in the relationship, especially when there's common service together, but there's no relationship. You know, I think this is something that Raja Bihari is going to address when he comes, because it's essential to have common service together, that there's an understanding of one another and acceptance of one another, and that's the basis of relationships. But, you know, it should be no surprise that in the age of Kali, that's a challenge. It's a mountain. It's a big challenge, because people like to be respected and they don't like to offer respect. And, you know, we want to respect, but we have an expectation of respect in return. So it's just how Kali works to make dissension and make it difficult to move forward. But so here's this big instruction. Your love for me will be shown by how much you cooperate with one another. And then, you know, different persons have different ideas of what to cooperate. Yeah, of course, you're supposed to cooperate with me, Sabal. What's wrong with you? Instead of a two-way. Because cooperation is two-way. It's not one-way. It's two-way. So it's dissension is a, and discord and disconnect and all these things are relation, people that do service together that don't necessarily have core respect for one another. It's the symptom of the age of Kali. So now how do we overcome that? You know, we're getting the scriptural indication. It's based on Supersoul. You know, but we're not on Supersoul. We're on, you know, Upadis. And, you know, judging and all those other things that we learned growing up. How to defend and protect ourselves when we don't have Krishna's shelter. So continue to be in Krishna's shelter and make the arrangement for, make the atmosphere conducive for a mutually respectful relationship, and then sometimes, you know, invite Braj Bihari to come and help to sort all that out. Because he's, you know, very good at it. Okay, we're going to answer the Prabhupada. Thank you.